Welcome to today's podcast. With us today is Shelley Bloom, Director of Legislative Awareness and Training. And today's topic will be on the benefits of FSAs, HRAs, and HSAs. However, before we begin, I would like to review the following with you. This podcast is designed to highlight various employee benefit matters of general interest to our listeners. It is not intended to interpret laws or regulations or to address specific client situations. You should not act or rely on any information contained herein without seeking the advice of an attorney or tax professional. So on that note, I would like to begin. Shelley, in the benefits world, we use three acronyms often. Do we know what they mean, and when can we combine them, and also who contributes and when? What are the limits, and can we use them together? First, let's talk about HRAs.
Certainly. Thank you, Jim. HRA stands for Health Reimbursement Arrangement, and this is something that an employer sets up with only employer dollars. Employees cannot contribute to a health reimbursement arrangement or an HRA. It is all by the employer. The employer can choose to use the money in a particular year, and whatever is not used is cut off and goes back into his pocket. Or the employer can choose to give you a set amount every year, and if you don't use it, they can carry it over into the next year. All of that accounting would be done by the employer, again, because there is no employee contribution. You can use those dollars that the employer is giving you by spending them on co-pays, co-insurance, and deductible, which is what we refer to in the 213D expenses. 213D is a schedule that comes out from the federal government on a regular basis. It's not necessarily every year, but it lists all of the things that we can use to spend this money that we get in our health reimbursement arrangement. It's also money that we can spend in our FSAs and our HSAs, but we'll talk about those soon. You cannot have an HRA standalone, and it is COBRA eligible in certain circumstances, which means that at times, depending on the benefits that you have set up in your plan document, you may be able to continue to contribute to and use your health reimbursement arrangement or HSA, even if you leave the employee.
Great. Thank you, Shelley. Now, for last month's podcast, you talked about standalone HRAs. Can you remind us about them?
Yes, I know. I just said that HRAs cannot stand alone. But there is a new regulation that became effective January 1 of 2017 going forward. If you are a small group, which means you have fewer than 50 employees, and you do not offer health insurance right now, you can create an HRA, health reimbursement arrangement, and you can give employees dollars that they can use to reimburse themselves for their individual health insurance, as well as those 213D expenses, co-pays, co-insurance, and deductible that we talked about. So that is a change, and it's effective January 1.
Okay, great. Thank you. Now, we're going to move on to FSAs. Could you tell me more about important things about flexible spending accounts?
Yes. An FSA is a flexible spending account. We also do hear them referred to as a Section 125 plan, maybe a cafeteria plan. Sometimes you just have a part of it called a POP plan or a premium-only plan. So the FSA or Section 125 is the bigger law. It's the part of the IRS code that talks about them, and it pulls all of these things together. It is pre-tax dollars that the employee contributes. Usually every time you have payroll, a small amount is taken out that goes into this pot that becomes your flexible spending account. The employer can also contribute to this account, and there are specific limits that the employer can contribute to based on what you're contributing, but generally it is just the employee that contributes. And it usually is, most people are familiar with the use it or lose it type provision, that I'm going to contribute $25 every 2 weeks when I have my payroll. At the end of that year, if I haven't used all my money, then I lose it. There are some provisions within the accounts now that you can extend a grace period, so for an additional 3 months, you'll be able to spend the money that you have in there, or you can also have your plan documents say that there is a specified amount and no more than $500 that you can carry over into the next year.
Okay, great. I have a few questions, though, in regards to FSAs. What exactly can a person purchase with that account or with that credit card, so to speak?
Well, I mentioned that 213D expenses before, and generally that is for copays, coinsurance, deductible. But I know one of the changes that happened a few years ago that's still frustrating to a lot of people is that you used to be able to use your flexible spending dollars for over-the-counter medications. So if you wanted a cold medicine or you wanted some of these newer medications that for treating your acid reflux or treating your allergies, and they're now available over the counter, you cannot use your flexible spending dollars for those over-the-counter medications. If by chance you speak with your doctor and your doctor says, yes, I'll write you a prescription for it, then in fact you would be able to use it. But generally, it's those copays, coinsurance, and deductible that a doctor or a doctor's office or a lab will ask you to pay that you are then getting reimbursed for, as well the prescription drugs. If you go to the pharmacy and your copay is $15 or $45 for that prescription drug, you can use your flexible spending card for that as well.
Great, thank you. Another question I have about FSA, Shelley, can I use this, let's say, for example, for the dentist or for the optometrist if I need a new pair of glasses?
Yes, you absolutely can. It's not just for health insurance expenses, but anything that is a non-cosmetic reason. So as you said, for dental, for vision coverage, yes, you can use those dollars that are in your flexible spending account at the dentist for any vision care. But if you choose to have purely cosmetic things done, maybe you're going to have a wart removed or something like that, if it's only for cosmetics because it's on the end of my nose and I don't want it to be there anymore, it may not be applicable. The same as if I want to have some reconstruction of my face, obviously that's not done. But yes, thank you for bringing that up.
Okay. One other item I wanted, a few other items obviously involving money. How much can a person contribute? Is there a limit or is there anything the government would, you know, say you can't do in regards to contributions?
Yes, there is a limit of the amount of money that you can put into a flexible spending account. And it is adjusted not necessarily every year, but it went from $2,550 to $2,600 this year. So that's the maximum amount that you can put into your flexible spending account. With your Section 125 plan, you can also contribute to your daycare fund if you have that. You can contribute separately to your transportation account. All of those are a part of that bigger Section 125 plan. But with the flexible spending, there is a maximum amount. I do want to say, too, that there are certain people that can be in this plan. If you are a sole proprietor, if you are a subchapter S corp owner and you own 2% or more, you cannot participate. If you are shareholders from the corporation, also, you are not able to participate in the flexible spending account. And I think one big thing that I want to bring out, too, is that with these flexible spending accounts, there is discrimination testing that must be done by that third-party administrator or person who does your administration for you. The discrimination is very important because it does say if you have a lot of highly compensated employees that are using more of the dollars than others, then your plan may be discriminatory and you'll have to adjust as an employer maximum amounts that certain people can put in. So even though you have a health plan where you're allowed to do some discriminating, you may not be able to do it because you have a flexible spending account.
Okay, great. My last question on FSAs. What about receipts and purchases and things like that? So if I go into the pharmacy, do I need to save my receipts or do I need to save my final paperwork from the doctor or hospital once I use this account?
Yes, you do have to save all your receipts because you are taking deductions. This is a pre-tax deduction, so when you pledge to have $25 taken out every time payroll is done, that is reducing the amount of money that you can be taxed on, which is certainly good for you, but it's also saying that you're going to use these for the 213D expenses. So if you were ever audited years down the road, Jim, you would need to prove that you've got your receipts from your doctors for your copays, that you bought a pair of glasses and here's how much they cost, or you used it on these prescriptions. so that they can say that the dollars that were taken out and put in your FSA, your flexible spending account, were actually used for bona fide 213D expenses. If you don't save those receipts, then there's certainly a concern that they would take some or all of that money away. It cannot be pre-tax, and you would have to pay initial or additional tax dollars on that. But it's also a good thing that when they swipe that card, generally that receipt goes to your administrator, and they know what you bought. So let's say you're at the pharmacy counter and you buy a couple prescriptions, but you need a gallon of milk, so you grab that at the same time. The administrator may contact you later and say, hey, Jim, you know, you did this, but you also bought the gallon of milk, which is not something you can buy in the pre-tax, and they'll ask you to return that money to them. So it's always good to keep your receipts.
All right, so it's good to be organized and keep your receipts for 7 years. I think that's the general rule of thumb.
It is the general rule of thumb, yes.
Okay.
7 years is good.
Great. Okay, the last section of our podcast today is on HSAs. One thing, Shelley, I've noticed, I've been reading a lot about HSAs now that President Trump is in office. Could you please tell me more about the importance of HSAs?
Certainly, Jim. HSAs are health savings accounts. So we talked about health reimbursements arrangements. Now we're talking about health savings accounts. Unlike the other two, which are basically owned by the employer, and the employer sets up the plan and sets up the shell of how the plan is going to work, this health savings account is truly a savings account that you own as the employee. You have to have a qualified high deductible health plan. You have to have minimum amounts that you're putting into it, but it is a way for you to save dollars, and you can choose to let them continue to grow in your savings account. And just like a typical savings account that you or I would have that can earn interest, or you can invest those dollars from your savings account, you can actually do this with your health savings account too. So you can put money in, your employer can put money in your health savings account, even your grandma, if she's giving away money and she's got $100 to give you, she can contribute to your health savings account as well. Whoever puts the money in, once the money goes in, it is your money. The employer can't get it back. No one else can get it back. It is your money as soon as it goes in your health savings account. You can take the account with you. Unlike the other two we talked about, when you leave the employer, you pretty much leave the flexible spending account behind, you leave the health reimbursement arrangement behind. But if I'm no longer at employer A, my health savings account is mine. I can set it up with my own bank. I can roll money over into my new employer's HSA. So I have a lot more opportunity to do things with that. The minimum deductible for the HSA, you have to have a health saving or a health plan that has a minimum deductible of $1,300 or $2,600 for other than a single. The maximum contributions that you can make to the plan for a single, $3,400. And if you are other than a single, husband and wife, parent, child, family, it would be $6,750. So the $1,300 and the $2,600 hasn't changed from last year. The contributions is a $50 increase from what we had in 2016. And one other really nice benefit, which is one of the reasons why I think President Trump and his team have been talking about this, is that those dollars are mine. I can choose to spend them now or wait until later. When you turn 55, you're able to make an additional contribution of $1,000 per year as a catch-up contribution. In other words, they're pretty much incenting you to put more money away on a pre-tax basis so that when you turn 65, you can use that money for whatever you want. Until you reach the age of 65, you can only use those dollars for 213D expenses. So again, co-pays, co-insurance, deductibles. But as soon as you reach 65, you can use that money for anything you want. So if I want to pay my Medicare, my supplement premiums with that, I can. If I want to take it out to spend it on something else, I can. Now, when you're 35 years old and you need money, you can take money out of your health savings account and you can use it to make a motorcycle payment or to go on vacation. But you have to declare that on your taxes, and there is a 20% penalty for using that money for something other than the 213D expenses. So So I think what's happening as we're changing what we're doing with health insurance and we're looking at repeal and replace or repair what we have with the Affordable Care Act, Trump and his team is saying, you know, the health savings account is a really good tool that people can use to manage. And it's not just when you're on a group plan, because you can buy an individual health insurance plan, and if it is qualified, then you can also open a health savings account, and you can use that as a way to keep additional dollars saved for when you get older.
Great. Thank you. I truly now understand the difference between the three accounts, so thank you for explaining them to me.
Jim, there's one other thing I want to bring up that's a little tricky with health savings accounts, and it's about dependents to age 26, because all of us know with the Affordable Care Act law, most employer groups are now extending the insurance to a dependent up to the age of 26. And they can stay on mom or dad's plan, they can be married, they can live in another state. There's really no restrictions from the health insurance side goes, but there is a restriction from the health savings account side. So if I'm a 24-year-old on my mom's plan, but I don't live with my mom, then my mom cannot use her health savings account to pay for any of my medical charges. So you have to live in the same household at least 50% of the year with mom or dad, whoever's plan that you're on. You have to be claimed as their dependent, and you also have to be under the age of 19 or up to age 24 if you're a student. So it sounds like a throwback to what we were doing before we got the Affordable Care Act, and in many ways it is. But it's a very clear distinction with the law and with health savings accounts that a lot of people aren't aware of.
Okay, great. Thank you, Shelley. Thank you for explaining that to me. Everyone, we hope you found this podcast helpful and informative. If you have any questions, then please contact your account manager or salesperson. So thank you.